It's Wisconsin Today. I'm Rob Verrett.
And I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Now let's take a spin through the pop culture and entertainment world of the 90s and 2000s.
With Coldplay, The O.C., NSYNC, Buffy the Vampire Slayer, Brandy, Angelina Jolie, they all helped to create joy and meaning for a Milwaukee native growing up in that era.
Ira Madison III was one of the only black students at his college prep high school and maybe one of the only gay kids.
In a new essay collection, he looks back at those memories and connects them with the pop culture that got him through tough times, along with his Saturday treks to a favorite store in Milwaukee, Collector's Edge Comics.
Ira Madison III is a culture critic, TV writer, and podcast host. His new book is called Pure Innocent Fun. Ira, welcome to Wisconsin Today.
Thank you for having me, Wisconsin Today. I'm in New York today, but, you know, I love Wisconsin. I just revisited for my book tour, and it was very nice to be home in Milwaukee. It had been a bit, so.
It had been a bit, and I think that warms up right to our first question. You know, you being born in Milwaukee, can you set the scene a little bit about growing up in this city and how it felt to you as a kid living in the city and some of those touchstones?
You know, I think that a lot of people, particularly artists, you know, and people who move to big cities, you know, always have this sort of fraught relationship with their hometown. You know, they want to leave and they want to go and do other things. And I think that that was very much me when I was younger. I wanted to do theater. I wanted to do television. And I just knew that living in New York or living in LA, where I also lived briefly, was somewhere that I needed to be. And I couldn't really accomplish those goals in Milwaukee. And I don't know, coming back recently, it was a lovely homecoming to visit with my family, to visit with some high school friends who were mentioned in the book. Some high school friends showed up who I actually had no idea, one, knew I had a book coming out or had listened to my podcast for years. So that was actually a very lovely sort of welcoming moment. It's been a lot of moments that have just been making me fall back in love, I guess, with my hometown.
I also love the idea that maybe they saw you in new ways because it's your mom who decides you go to Marquette University High School, the all-boys Catholic school, and you're just like not okay with that as a kid. What was that, what was that experience like for you coming from predominantly black Milwaukee schools?
I mean, I talk a lot in the book that you know, I was a closeted teenager at the time. So, you know, going to an all boys school that, you know, everyone would always make a joke about, you know, it being like a school full of gay people was the common refrain I would hear in middle school. So that stressed me out. But then the other thing really was just I was going into unfamiliar territory. You know, I didn't know anybody. And I, you know, I was an anxious and sort of kid who liked to keep to himself and I liked to read and watch movies and television, et cetera, you know? And I think that I had really sort of found people who made me comfortable throughout 4 years of middle school. And then I was suddenly just not going to be with them anymore.
I appreciate all of the glimpses of your grandmother, who you call Gran, and there's this point where she's like tells you to be like those nice white boys, and I mean that must have been so hard for you to hear that as a kid because you couldn't be like those quote nice white boys, nor didn't have any intention of being like them. What was that like?
You know, I think that for me it was hard to hear, but I think when you revisit moments from your childhood, you sort of get a perspective that you didn't have before. You know, my grandmother, I mean, she was a person who grew up through Jim Crow in the South, you know, and she had lived in Tennessee and she had moved to Wisconsin. And I think now an adult, I have the perspective of I get exactly what she meant. You know, I know what it's like in the current political climate. It was sound advice, you know, it wasn't maybe presented in a way that was helpful to me as a teenager. But I think, you know, it's a thing that is relatable to a lot of young people. people of color in mm-hmm. America, particularly people who grew up in Wisconsin, you know, and go to schools in spaces where there aren't other people like them. You do have to, in a sense, perform and be like the people around you so that you can appear either non-threatening or you can appear relatable, et cetera.
We're talking with Milwaukee-born and raised author Ira Madison III about his new essay collection. It's called Pure Innocent Fun. Ira, let's spend a bit more time on Angelina Jolie because...
Absolutely.
you have memories of her journal and that reminded you of some of the darker things that had flashed in your mind and in your writing and your wanting to escape. What was it about her as an actress and about what she was grappling with as a person that where you found connection?
It's really interesting revisiting Angelina Jolie because I feel like these Rolling Stone interviews, and she did several, were just always so revealing of her mental state at the time. I think that she was a lot more open in this Rolling Stone interview about dark moments that she had written about in her journal, et cetera. And I think it was sort of revealing to see a celebrity talking about their mental health that way in the early 2000s, before we really allowed public figures to have those conversations publicly, you know? Mm.
At that time when you were really connecting with her work and these diaries, I mean, what were you going through? What was that like?
I think that I was just a stranger in a strange land, you know? I was, unlike the kids at school, I had darker impulses at times, you know, that might have verged on, you know, maybe suicidal thoughts or just different thoughts about just how I didn't really fit in. And I think that Angelina Jolie's interviews were something that brought me comfort. I think that pop culture was something that brought me comfort. And culture that you consume, it helps a lot in forming who you become as a person.
All right. I want to talk about the Fresh Prince of Bel-Air. And mm-hmm. speaking of consumption, and there's the specific episode that you write about Will's father, who left the family years ago, shows up out of nowhere planning a road trip with his son. But Will's dad ends up letting him down again, canceling the trip at the last minute. And let's take a listen, though. Here's Will Smith playing Will in that episode.
I learned how to drive. I learned how to shave. I learned how to fight without him. I had 14 great birthdays without him. He never even sent me a damn card. To hell with him! How come he don't want me, man?
You call this episode real. Can you talk about this show and what this meant to you growing up and how you identified?
I think that The Fresh Prince of Bel-Air was just this sort of wish fulfillment show that came, you know, right after the era of Dynasty on TV. And it came after this Reagan excess on television, glamorous soap operas. And I think that it was a way to bridge the gap between shows like that and the burgeoning hip hop culture and youth culture that was rising on like MTV, et cetera, mm-hmm. and BET. And I think that it allowed Will Smith to be placed into that world so you could see some of the glamorous wish fulfillment, but then you could also see what it would be like if you just were plopped into Bel-Air as a young Black person. And I think that it was a really fun balance of stories that maybe seemed a little soapy and outlandish and just really fun sitcom stories. And then also some real emotional stories of what it was like to be Black in America at the time.
Some of the most popular TV shows with Black families at the time, besides Fresh Prince, you know, it's Family Matters and Cosby Show. How did those shows mirror ideas about Black families at the time and what networks thought Black audiences wanted?
Well, I mean, they were very popular shows, so obviously Black audiences did want them, but, you know, obviously white audiences watched them as well. And I think that the Cosby Show in particular is this sort of show that is very, it's a very respectable show. You know, it's about putting your best foot forward. It's very Black excellence forward. It's just sort of be the best, be twice as good, et cetera, kind of show. And it wasn't really a show that appealed to me because I was not good at school at all. So it's not something that I really aspired to.
I mean, you also said that Cosby Show simply, it wasn't funny to you. You didn't
not
see
me.
The
no.
humor. Yeah.
Yeah, maybe you did.
I watched it growing up too. I mean, what I found...
Did you laugh?
You know, at times I did, but look, I okay. you know, I wasn't a Black kid either, you know, watching
I laughed at Friends, you know.
Okay.
If you found it funny, it's funny.
Appreciate that. So, you know, I want to circle back here to Marquette University High School because mm-hmm. there's this point at the end that, like, makes my jaw drop personally. I mean, you get an acceptance letter to Marquette University, and you're like, look, you know, kids mm-hmm. who went to the high school were kind of a shoo-in to getting accepted at Marquette, and you shred your acceptance letter and your full-ride scholarship, and you lie to your grand about getting in, and it makes me suddenly realize how badly you wanted to get out of Milwaukee. Can you talk about that time as a young adult?
I had a lot of dreams and aspirations for, like I said, theater, for being a writer, and I wanted to go to New York. I wanted to go to NYU, and I eventually did for graduate school where I got my playwriting master's. But the closest thing then was Chicago, and I really wanted to go to Chicago and do theater there. And the other school I got into was that. And so I just had to make sure that I went there, you know? And I think that a lot of my very close friends from high school still live at home, and they've made lives of their own, et cetera, there. But I couldn't have accomplished the goals that I wanted if I had stayed in Milwaukee. And so I'm happy with the decisions that I made.
So as a pop culture nerd, what are you currently obsessed with? What are you crushing on?
I'm a reality TV person. So I just watched the premiere of Survivor last night. It's fun. I prefer Australian Survivor, which I am also watching. It's currently on now. And I watch that with a VPN. I'm a big competition reality person. You know, I love The Traitors. I'm loving Deal or No Deal Island. Those are the kind of shows that I love just when I'm done writing, sitting down and watching to turn off my brain.
Okay, Ira, you have a passage to read for us about your time.
I do.
Yes, about your time in high school. Would you be able to set the scene, and can you read it for us?
I think it's just a passage from early on in the book about when I was first going to Marquette High School. By the time I got to Marquette University High School, my insecurities increased. Never mind that this all-boys school terrified me as a closeted 14-year-old, because whenever I told people I was going there instead of Rufus King, where most of my friends and classmates were going, they lowered their voices and said, in hushed tones, "Ain't that the gay school?" Like I just admitted I watched Friends instead of Martin on Thursday nights. For the record, my Uncle Bill's partner, Kevin, introduced me to both shows during Thanksgiving one year. Kevin was Black, but he and my uncle were both Chicago-living bougie Black gay men in the 90s, and I suppose that meant you watched NBC and not Fox on Thursday nights.
Thank you so much for that. I'm wondering, for a kid who's listening to you and seeing a lot happening in their world, especially with DEI, as you mentioned at the outset, the Trump administration, what would you tell that kid?
Well, I would tell them, first of all, that words are powerful, you know, and that's why I love writing, and that's why I love reading. And I think that there is a lot of focus on DEI, you know, and what does that mean? Diversity, equity, and inclusion. And I think that we've learned that we're in a space where people use words like that, or they use the word woke, right? Mm-hmm. To sort of just as buzzwords to make a point. A lot of people just throw those words out when they don't even know what they're talking about. It's just an easy way for them to latch it onto something that they don't particularly like. learn other words, you know, learn ways to change the conversation, and don't talk about DEI, talk about diversity, talk about equity, talk about inclusion. Don't stick to buzzwords. Read a lot more, expand your worldview, expand your vocabulary, and then you won't have to play the game that other people are playing. That's also why you should watch Survivor.
Ira, thank you so much for joining us. This has been such a pleasure.
Thank you.
Ira Madison III is a culture critic and podcast host. The Milwaukee Native's new essay collection, it's called Pure Innocent Fun.
Fish fry season is upon us as Lent begins tomorrow, and the tradition of Friday fish fry dinners in Wisconsin, that takes on a special role in this 40-day period.
So, when it comes to fish fries, we want to know, where do you find the best fish fry dinner in your community? Is it in a church basement? Maybe it's at a local supper club. What type of fish do you like deep fried? Perhaps it's the perch, the walleye, the cod?
Bluegill? And don't forget to tell us about your favorite sides and the fixins, the fries, the cucumber salad, the rye bread. Email wisconsintoday@wpr.org. Or you can call or text to get in touch. The number is 888-642-0232. That's 888-642-0232.
Wisconsin Today is the work of a team of producers, hosts, and technical directors. Learn more about us at wpr.org/Wisconsin Today. I'm Kate Archer Kent.
And I'm Rob Ferret. You're listening to WPR News.